This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Get the contract out, put it on the table, let him sign it, let him write whatever numbers he wants to put on there. Man United are back.
What a numpty Rio Ferdinand sounds like. This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. So much to get our teeth stuck into on this Monday afternoon. It's probably the best day of the week to look back at the Premier League action as we head into the international break. Where do Manchester United go from here? Is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer on the verge of losing his job? There are so many Premier League managers already that are on the hot seat.
Man United are back.
Manchester United are certainly not back. Rio Ferdinand said in March that he had to be given the job on the spot. Look where Manchester United are now. Just a couple of points above the relegation zone. Could Mauricio Pochettino walk away from Tottenham after yet another defeat? Manchester City lose 2-0 at home to Wolves. Is it that big a surprise that Manchester City lost? And how good were Wolves yesterday? We'll also be asking the question whether Marco Silva could be losing his job at Everton. And also talking about Newcastle, Matty Longstaff. What a moment. Scoring at St James's Park on his first Premier League appearance. What a moment for him. If you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. This is the Premier League Fan Show here on Love Sport.
Man United are back.
So much to talk about on this Monday afternoon. Rio Ferdinand back in March after Manchester United knocked PSG out of the Champions League. He said that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had to be given the job, give him the contract and get him to sign it. Well, he looks rather a bit silly at the moment having said that. It felt so premature at that moment in time, far too early to be giving Ole Gunnar Solskjaer that permanent job. And now Manchester United fans staring down the barrel of what looks like a very tough season ahead. Could they honestly be relegated? Could Manchester United be relegated into the Championship? If you've got a view on that, call us on 0208 70 20 558. Will Pochettino leave Tottenham in this international break? Will Marco Silva lose his job during this international break? It seems to get earlier and earlier in the season when we all already ask these questions of whether someone's job is on the line. But this is the reality that we live in nowadays, and there are a number of managers that are currently looking over their shoulder, wondering if they will still be in a job by the end of this international break. As I said, we head into this international period, the second international break of the season. 2 weeks now to wait before the next Premier League action, and a rather massive game on Super Sunday to bring us back after the international break. It is Manchester United against Liverpool at Old Trafford. Liverpool looking to tie Manchester City's all-time record of 18 consecutive wins. Manchester United just a few points ahead of the relegation zone. Panic stations there. We're obviously going to look back at Manchester City's loss against Wolves, and also that Newcastle win at home against Manchester United. We knew going into that game that there'd be so much to talk about, a kind of irrelevant of the result. No matter what happened, there was going to be something massive to be talking about. If Newcastle had lost, with the pressure of being ramped up even further on Steve Bruce, it was the first time in 23 attempts as a manager that he has beaten the club that he played for as a player. But Matty Longstaff, what a moment for that young lad. And I'm sure that producer Laurie, when he comes in and later in the hour, for once this season, will be able to wax lyrical about Newcastle and be pretty positive about their display yesterday against Manchester United. But the questions continue. Looking through the Premier League results from the weekend, it started at Saturday lunchtime, and people were expecting a response, a reaction from Tottenham. Well, from the first 2 minutes, it was absolutely pathetic from Tottenham. You look at that first goal, that was a comedy of errors. Not only was Hugo Lloris at fault, and we do wish him all the best with that injury because it looked horrendous, dislocating his elbow. And no matter what you think of any club, never nice to see someone go down like that. But it was a horrendous error. But in the build-up to it, this was 90 seconds into the game, and Eric Lamella didn't have the presence of mind, didn't have the intensity or the energy to close down the cross. It was the easiest cross that Pascal Gross could ever put in, and it just went from bad to worse for Tottenham. They seem to lack energy. Have the players given up on Mauricio Pochettino? I think they have. I think they've decided to down tools, and this is one of those periods, one of those real alarm bells. It was embarrassing enough for Tottenham to lose against Bayern Munich 7-2 in midweek last week, but that performance, as well as the result away at Brighton 3-0, they didn't really look like scoring at all. and they were absolutely battered, and Brighton probably should have scored more than the three they did. Every time, it was like the latter stages of the Bayern Munich game. Every time Brighton got the ball, you felt like they had a good chance of scoring. And you asked the question, has Mauricio Pochettino taken this club as far as he can? Yes, they've reached their ceiling of kind of finishing Champions League places for the last 3 or 4 years on the trot. He has, if he wants to further his career, he has to leave Tottenham in the next few months and probably the next few weeks. You also have to ask the question, is Mauricio Pochettino all that? He's done a very good job at Tottenham, and they're a better side now than when he took over 5 years ago. But every other one of the top six clubs, and so many people give so much grief to Manchester United and to Arsenal, for example, for where they are at the moment. But since Mauricio Pochettino took over, five of the top six sides have won trophies in that time period. Tottenham are the only club not to. You have to ask questions of Pochettino. Yes, he is under massive constraints, and you feel like Daniel Levy for a lot of that time hasn't backed him. But you have to ask the question of Pochettino, is he as good a manager as everyone claims he has to be? Everyone's talking about him resigning, and I think he probably will walk from the club, but should he actually be sacked? That's one of the big questions. And after a performance like that, it feels like the Tottenham players have given up on their manager, and it seems a matter of time until Pochettino either leaves the club or he is sacked. So another chastening experience for Tottenham away at Brighton. Into the 3 o'clock kickoffs, Burnley 1, Everton 0. Marco Silva, I think he's a massively overrated manager. I don't rate him at all. I think people say how he did a really good job at Hull, but ultimately he failed in his objective, which was to keep Hull in the Premier League. And he went to Watford. It started off okay, started off well, and then just quickly subsided. Exactly the same has happened at Everton. Started reasonably well, and now Everton look absolutely awful. They're not scoring any goals. You question why they're buying Moise Kean for £27 million in the summer, and you've got Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who's one of the most pathetic arguments for a centre-forward I've ever seen in the Premier League. And yet this young 19-year-old, one of the highly rated young European forwards, is sat on the bench behind Calvert-Lewin, who has a pretty awful goal-scoring record in this league. Marco Silva's job should be on the line, and he should be sacked by Everton. Another 1-0 loss for them away at Turf Moor. Liverpool 2, Leicester 1 at Anfield. A 95th-minute penalty for James Milner gave Liverpool their 8th straight win to start this season. 17 consecutive wins going back into last season. One short of Manchester City's all-time top-flight record. And Liverpool can equal that away at Old Trafford straight after the international break. Sadio Mane put in another good performance and scored the opening goal. James Maddison pegged Liverpool back with 10 minutes to go with Leicester's first shot on target. But James Milner, the ice-cool man, he may be boring, but he certainly can deal with pressure, and scored the win at four Liverpool to make sure they have this big gap already. 8 points at the top of the Premier League table. Norwich 1, Aston Villa 5. Not many people would have predicted that, but it just all clicked for Aston Villa. They took seemingly every chance they got, and it could have been more. Wesley missed the penalty to go to a hat-trick. Norwich looked all over the place. Daniel Farker perhaps has a decent excuse that they do have injuries, but that goes back to why they only spent £1.5 million over the summer. And Aston Villa, players like Jack Grealish, John McGinn, really hitting good form. And Wesley is scoring goals, and that was one of the big questions we had of Villa before the season. Not much to talk about Vicarage Road. Watford 0, Sheffield United 0. Well, that's it. Anyway, moving on to the next one. West Ham 1, Crystal Palace 2. West Ham were given the lead by Sebastian Haller, who's looking like a real handful up front. But Palace, even though you look on paper, they have such an average, such a rubbish team, if we're being brutally honest, they just found a way. Declan Rice with a stupid act to give away a penalty to make it 1-1. And then despite the fact it was ruled out, it's actually one of the very few times where VAR has given a goal rather than taken away a goal. And it just shows the fine margins, but it was a legal goal and Palace took the lead. And West Ham will be very disappointed at home to lose out there. Then on to the Sunday, Manchester City 0, Wolves 2. We'll be getting more reaction to that in the next few minutes. Was it that big a surprise? You look back at the game, and even though David Silva hit the bar from a free kick, Bernardo Silva had a good chance, Wolves had plenty of opportunities in that game. First half, they could have been 2 or 3-0 up by half time with some of the chances through Cutrone, Raul Jimenez as well. But Adama Traore showing a real clinical edge towards the end of that game, Wolves catching City out on the counter-attack. And in some ways, Wolves were fully deserving of that win. Yes, they didn't have a lot of possession, but that's the Wolves' way. And they do thrive normally against the top six sides. Arsenal 1, Bournemouth 0. Not a great game for with David Luiz scoring his first goal for Arsenal. But Arsenal actually able to keep a clean sheet. Not many times you can say that over the last 12 months. Southampton 1, Chelsea 4. For however bad Southampton were in this game, Chelsea looked very impressive in an attacking sense. Not necessarily when they were put under a bit of pressure defensively, and that was shown in the Danny Ings goal. But Tammy Abraham continued his goal and score record, 8 goals in the Premier League this season so far. Mason Mount looked incredibly impressive again. And for Batshuayi's goal for the fourth, a great bit of skill by Christian Pulisic to play him through. So another comfortable victory for Frank Lampard's side. And Newcastle 1, Manchester United 0. Not necessarily the greatest of conditions up in the North East, but Newcastle getting the win. Matty Longstaff, what a moment he'll never forget. A pretty good strike from the edge of the penalty area, and Manchester United looked woeful. Newcastle actually looked all right. And we'll be getting the views of producer Laurie later in the hour. Just a quick word on our predictions. We'll talk about it a bit more later in the hour. Laurie actually had a good week. He got 8. He had a couple of direct hits. I got 6. And for all the grief that Charlie, who obviously sometimes fills in for me and does the fan shows, gives Laurie for how bad he is at predictions, Charlie didn't even get half of the number of points that Laurie did this week, so I'm sure we can give Mr. Hawkins a bit of grief for that. If you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Lovesport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. Up next, we'll be reacting to Manchester City's loss against Wolves by 2-0. Was it that big a surprise?
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're going to be reacting to a big result at the Etihad yesterday afternoon. Manchester City 0, Wolves 2, as champions Manchester City fell 8 points behind Liverpool in the title race. To give his reaction on that defeat for Manchester City, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Andy Hampson, PA football writer for the North West. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Andy. Even though City had a lot of the possession, was it that big a surprise that Wolves were able to go to the Etihad and pick up 3 points? And based on the performance, did they deserve all 3 points?
Hello, Kieran. Yeah, I thought Wolves played really well yesterday. It was a very disciplined performance from them. City made a lot of mistakes, gave them chances, gifted 3 really clear-cut chances to them in the first half, which they missed, and you'd expect they might be made to pay for, really, as City cranked up the pressure in the second half. But Wolves stuck at it. They soaked up absolutely everything City threw at them, and they took their chances when they came again at the end. They played very well. They really deserved it, and it really looked like it was City that the team that were in Turkey on Thursday night and not Wolves.
It was only the second time, Andy, in 45 league games that City have failed to score. The last time that happened at home in the league was against Huddersfield, surprisingly, in May 2018. Why was it that City, they had a couple of good chances. David Silva hit the bar from a free hit. Bernardo Silva had a good chance from inside the 6-yard box. But there weren't necessarily a whole host of absolutely clear-cut chances. Why was that yesterday?
No, you're right. I mean, really, they just weren't at it at all yesterday. They were sloppy all over the pitch. They didn't get any service to Aguero. And defensively, they were absolutely shambolic. The spark was lacking yesterday. It's hard to put your finger on what it was, but obviously they clearly missed Kevin De Bruyne. Normally, if things aren't going well for City, you get to about 60 minutes and De Bruyne is the player who takes the ball and says, right, I'm going to do something about this, and takes over. Last week against Dinamo Zagreb, they had to bring Sterling off the bench to find that spark. They tried it yesterday with Bernardo Silva, but that didn't happen. Really, there's just something lacking yesterday. They just weren't at full throttle. I don't know why that is. Perhaps the international break now coming at a good time for them. I mean, I thought, to be honest, Pep Guardiola himself last Friday, his press conference, he was very downbeat. It was like he was a bit in need of a rest himself. So I think maybe the next couple of weeks might give them a chance to refresh, and then maybe they'll come back all guns blazing after the break, hopefully with De Bruyne fit again.
Everyone knows that Manchester City have a lot of phenomenal attacking players. They haven't won back-to-back Premier Leagues through having an average squad and only a good 11. But does Kevin De Bruyne's absence yesterday in a game like that against a good team, even though Wolves have struggled at the start of the season, they thrive against top six sides and they've got some really good players in there that could break into the top six in terms of transfers. Does a game like yesterday prove that even though City have a whole array of fantastic players, they really do, but that De Bruyne is the one that absolutely makes it tick, and without him in these types of games, City do perhaps struggle for that creativity?
Yeah, I think so, and that was clearly obvious yesterday. I mean, David Silva's coming to the end of his career now. He's not performing at the top level absolutely every game now. Leroy Sane, they're missing him. They don't have that extra injection of pace they can bring on. Bernardo Silva, he's not quite hit the levels he did last season. Riyad Mahrez has performed well this season, but he had a very quiet game yesterday, as did Raheem Sterling, who has been another go-to player. He just had one of those games yesterday where he was off it. And Aguero, as I was saying, they couldn't really get the ball to him. These guys that they do normally look to, but it was just lacking yesterday. And De Bruyne is normally the one who brings that all together. As much as I like Ilkay Gundogan and David Silva, players like that, they are very good players, but at the moment they're just not the kind of players who are going to grab the game by the scruff of the neck and make sure City win.
What did you make, Andy, of Pep Guardiola's decision in terms of the fullbacks that he went with? Because he went with Kyle Walker at right back, who's been left out of the England squad yet again. He went with Joao Cancelo at left back, who is definitely more of a right back. Obviously, Benjamin Mendy, we believe, has picked up another injury in training, which I'm sure will frustrate Guardiola more. But were you surprised by his decision of the fullbacks, not only not playing Zinchenko at left back, who has been playing there for most of the season so far, but also picking Cancelo, but out of position?
Yeah, it was a surprise, really. Benjamin Mendy getting injured again, you know, that's another blow for them. And bringing in Cancelo means that in the last four games in all competitions, including the Carabao Cup game, City have now played four different left-backs in four different games. I mean, that doesn't make for stability or consistency, really. It was a surprise. I thought Cancelo did play fairly well, and then he switched to right-back in the second half, and it transpired that Kyle Walker's not been too well recently. He's not been training properly. He's lost a bit of weight. He's had a bit of a stomach bug. It is a problem at the moment because City's full-backs aren't firing, really, on all cylinders. I mean, you would normally expect if Mendy wasn't to play that either Zinchenko or Angelino would come in, but neither of them did, which just really that Guardiola doesn't have full faith in them at the moment. And it's a problem. As the whole of the defence is at the moment, with the two centre-backs injured as well, there's just no real consistency at the back at the moment.
What is Guardiola going to do at the back then? Because obviously they can't make any transfers until January. John Stones is still out, although the jury is very much still out on John Stones as a top-level centre-back. Aymeric Laporte, who is City's best defender by quite some way, is going to be out probably until at least January, if not a little bit further than that. And obviously coming off the back of a serious injury, it's going to take him a while to come back from that. So what is the kind of solution, really, for Guardiola in the short term? Because Otamendi was at fault numerous times yesterday, sliding in and getting caught out quite a lot. Fernandinho is a very good, very experienced player, but he lacks the real pace at the top level to play at centre-back. So what can Guardiola do over the next couple of months up until the January transfer window to kind of perhaps steady the ship at the back?
Yeah, it's a very good question. You're absolutely right about Nicolas Otamendi. He was pretty poor yesterday. And if you're looking at the two of them, you'd say Fernandinho was the specialist defender and not Otamendi. I mean, he really will be crossing his fingers that John Stones is fit again after the international break. I mean, yes, you're right about what you say about him. He's perhaps not performing consistently at the top level, but he is a specialist centre-back, and they do have high hopes for him. He could do worse, I suppose, than play Eric Garcia or Taylor Harwood-Bellis. But as we know about Guardiola, he's very reluctant to use his youngsters in the Premier League. So at the moment, they're just having to really, really make do. I mean, he has mentioned Kyle Walker could play there or Rodri could play there. But really, when you're trying to win the trophy, City is trying to win, really, to be making do with makeshift defenders isn't ideal. I think, you know, the best hope is that John Stones is fit in a couple of weeks' time.
And just finally then, Andy, you mentioned how perhaps the break, sometimes it comes at a bad time when you're in good momentum. You feel like it's a good time for them. And the game afterwards, on the face of it, doesn't look easy. A trip to Selhurst Park to Crystal Palace is never an easy place to go. Is that something that Guardiola would be wary of? That even though you'd imagine Man City against Crystal Palace, that would be a game they should win. But City lost at home to Crystal Palace last season.
They did, yes. I mean, Crystal Palace were a tricky team to play against. I think the break is coming at a good time for City. It's not been a good few weeks, really, since the last international break. They lost at Norwich, of course. They really struggled to beat Everton last week. They've lost two centre-halves through injury. They've had this Bernardo Silva controversy as well, hanging over the club. I do think, you know, this fortnight to get away and, you know, come back refreshed in a couple of weeks will help them. Crystal Palace, as you say, isn't an easy game. But then again, you know, Liverpool... you know, Liverpool haven't looked entirely convincing to me. I mean, they lost to Napoli in the Champions League. They didn't play brilliantly against Salzburg. They were lucky against Leicester at the weekend. So City don't need to despair yet. I think there's plenty of opportunities for them. And, of course, they play Liverpool in a month's time, which is going to be an absolutely key game, eagerly anticipated.
Should be a massive game. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Andy. That was Andy Hampson, PA football writer for the North West, giving his views on City's defeat against Wolves yesterday. Big questions of not just the defence in terms of the likes of Otamendi and Fernandinho that started yesterday, but also of Pep Guardiola. They were interested in Harry Maguire. They felt like, and fair play, they felt like £80 million that Harry Maguire wasn't worth that. But when you lose Vincent Kompany, surely City had to bring in a centre-back, and they didn't. And even though you may say, yes, they are unlucky that Laporte's out for such a long while, considering he is one of the best defenders in the Premier League, but this is the same situation that, for example, you see at Manchester United, where they let Romelu Lukaku go, but then didn't bring anyone else in to replace him. That you kind of lend yourself to this dangerous situation where if you don't bring in a replacement, all it takes is one injury. And if you think about it, it wasn't that unlucky that Laporte got injured, because he was trying to foul someone in the process of doing it. I think it was Adam Webster or Dan Burn for Brighton that he got injured trying to take them out. So it wasn't a case of a really horrendous, unlucky injury. It was self-inflicted, and City have put themselves in a situation where centre-back wise they're in real trouble, and that could really harm them this season. But full credit to Wolves, who took their chances on the counter-attack. They played it brilliantly. Adama Traore scoring two late goals to give them the win. They could have scored even more. And on the breakfast show this morning, Jordan Russell from Wolves Fancast joined Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's, and they began by asking him whether he was feeling more positive about Wolves' season after a tricky start.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot better than the last time I was on, anyway. So, yeah, you know, fantastic week. It's a pinch myself moment about the result yesterday, but it was one of those, on the reflection of the 90 minutes, fully deserved, and it wasn't one of those typical smash and grabs. We actually went there with a game plan. We could have been 2 or 3-0 up at half-time. We just carried on just exploiting Man City, and I think we got it spot on yesterday.
Did you manage to get to the game yourself?
No, not yesterday, no. Managed to watch it.
Yeah.
The 90 minutes, but I didn't manage to get there myself yesterday. But that was more so to do with the fact of, I think that with a lot of these European games coming up thick and fast as well, it's got to a point where you've got to start sort of picking and choosing your moments when to go for it. A lot of that, Wolves fans. So I think Man City was one where a lot of fans were in the same boat, where we sort of scratched it off and thought, we'll save the money on this one.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, look, it was a fantastic result. You just touched on there exploiting Man City. You were exploiting Man City. What was it about the City team that have at times looked perfect, to be honest with you? What is there to exploit for you guys at the minute, do you reckon?
Well, I think if you look at Man City on a whole, since Pep's from there, they are, you know, they've been a lot of years ahead of a lot of teams other than Liverpool, really. But it's just sort of how the game went yesterday. I think that it was a bit of, you know, us performing very well, maybe Man City not performing to the peak of the powers, but also just the fact of some of the players that are missing. You know, Laporte was a massive miss for them, Kevin De Bruyne. And I think that it was actually dangerous when they broke down a little bit, that the spine of the team was quite weak, actually, and we did cut through and carve through them a few times. Obviously, that's, you know, pace and power on the break also, but yeah, they didn't look, any time we got the ball, they didn't look their usual selves, to be honest with you.
What has happened in the last week? So it wasn't a great start to the season, then obviously no wins in the Premier League, all of a sudden great win away in Europe, back-to-back wins in the Premier League, no goals conceded. What's changed?
I just think it was that thing of confidence. I think that, you know, you don't become a bad team overnight. We had a bit of bad luck at the start of the season in terms of the Leicester, you know, the first game of the season away at Leicester with the VAR disallowed goal. It just sort of, we just didn't start very well, I don't think. Obviously, then we got that big win against Watford, which, you know, at the time was vital, really. But it's just kicked us into another gear. That's 4 wins in a row now in all competitions we've got. And very much yesterday, and against Besiktas, I thought we looked like the old Wolves.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, obviously, big time coming up. I want to talk a bit about the defensive shape that you guys have got at the moment. That was a big part. No one goes to the Etihad and keeps a clean sheet. In fact, I think I saw a stat that it's the first time that Guardiola has been beaten at home to a clean sheet. So a quick word on Rui Patricio. He made a couple of saves yesterday, although I'd say wasn't worked as much as maybe I thought he might have. But the defensive shape was very good yesterday.
Yeah, and I think that there's always that... we were playing Troy Aure and Vinagre at wing-backs. Typically, they're very, you know, sort of attacking wing-backs. So, Weston, Doherty and Johnny from the European game. So, you know, probably thinking that that's our weakness, is that they're going to exploit us a little bit down those flanks. But defensively, like you say, the shape was fantastic. Even when Solice went off, and there's I want to have a word, really, for Ryan Bennett, who... again, hasn't started that well to the season, and often can be the scapegoat with Wolves fans, just because I think he's a bit unfashionable. But I thought he came on yesterday and he slotted in, like, you know, absolutely brilliant, and we just looked balanced. And it's rare to see Man City, or, you know, watch anyone against Man City and think, you know what, we weren't actually under that much pressure. There wasn't I can't think of a time that we were actually under the cosh for more than sort of 5 minutes or so. So, you know, you've got to take your hats off to, you know, the shape that we, you know, that we play, and, you know, they never really got behind us once, I don't think.
Yeah, and looking at the league this season, it is, we were talking about it earlier in the show, it's an unusual table with United and Spurs struggling as badly as they are. Of course, there is a little bit of transition for Chelsea and Arsenal. You never know necessarily what you're going to get. Is there an opportunity here for Wolves to actually seek a top four spot?
I think top four could be ambitious, but I do think you're right with the actual shape of the league. I genuinely think Liverpool and Man City are going to finish 20 to 30 points ahead of third place. And I do think that they are, you know, those places are up for the grabs this year, which is very strange to say. There is no reason why Wolves couldn't come in the top four. For myself personally, I think, you know, realistically, if we come seventh again, that'd be a fantastic season. But I do think, you know, the whole of the Premier League got a chance outside that top two of coming in the top four this year.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're going to be reacting to Manchester United's defeat at Newcastle yesterday. Matty Longstaff scored his first goal on an impressive top-flight debut, which condemned Manchester United to 12th place in the table, 9 points, just a couple of points above the relegation zone. And to react to that, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Dominic Booth, a Manchester United writer for Manchester Evening News. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Dominic. Did it really come as a surprise, the performance yesterday? Because I get the sense there was quite a lot of concern from United fans going into this game. So was the loss actually that surprising to United fans?
I think the performance wasn't a huge surprise, given how United have played so far this season, and obviously the injuries that they've got at the moment, which are definitely playing their part. It was surprising to me that Newcastle won the game, actually, because I don't particularly think they're a good side either. I think United have still got a better team than Newcastle on paper. And actually, the goal came when United were having their best spell of the game. But United just they're just not creating enough chances at the moment. So you can't really be surprised when they lose these games, especially away from home, where they're really struggling at the moment.
Manchester United won the first 9 away games in all competitions under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. They've now won none of the last 11, drawing 4 and losing 7. Why is that the case? I mean, you can talk about Manchester United's form in general, but in particular on the road, why have they gone from starting so well on the road to suddenly terrible on the road?
I think teams have sussed them out a little bit and sussed out what Solskjaer wants to do, which is basically quite a simple counter-attacking game plan. He's brought in pacey players, and he wants space in behind opposition defences for those players to be released into, Daniel James and Marcus Rashford, Anthony Martial when he's fit. And teams now know that if they sit deep, if they keep a relatively good shape, stay disciplined, then United just don't have the tools to get round them and play through them. There's just not enough quality to do that. So they've been punished because of that, and they've been punished because of injuries as well. You know, have to re-emphasise that point that injuries have been very detrimental to United's form this season.
As you mentioned, Dominic, one thing that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer pointed out after the game was that I think he said six of the starting 11 that played on the opening weekend against Chelsea weren't playing yesterday. Is that a legitimate excuse for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer with their current form? Or does that point to the summer and thinking, well, you shouldn't have let Romelu Lukaku go without bringing someone else in, that maybe United should have brought an extra one or two bodies in that United fans are craving, rather than sat here now, obviously with the benefit of hindsight, but sat here now criticising the number of injuries and that's the reason why United's form has been so poor?
Yeah, it was quite clear in the summer that they didn't get players in two key positions. I think they needed was two extra signings, one in central midfield and a forward, either someone can play out wide or through the middle to replace Lukaku, like you say. And if they had got those two players, then we maybe wouldn't be talking about the injuries and Solskjaer wouldn't be using that as an excuse. Not that he did, to be fair, after the Newcastle game. He didn't shy away. He did criticise his players and say the performance wasn't good enough. But I think all United fans will accept that they didn't have a transfer window that they really should have done. People talk about spending 140 million, but if you take away the Lukaku fee, actually they spent something more, like 70 million. So they're in this position, and I don't think things are going to get easier until A, players are back from injury, and B, the January transfer window where they have to sign at least one player, I think.
So where does the blame lie? Because you ask United fans, kind of the answer does differ, but kind of the general answer is at board level, and in particular Ed Woodward. Is he the main person to blame, or does Ole Gunnar Solskjaer deserve more criticism than he's getting, and do the players escape criticism because Ed Woodward perhaps is an easier target than the individual players?
I think that you have to share the blame in situations like this, and Solskjaer should not be absolved from blame at all, although I don't agree with people who say that he should be sacked, because I don't think that would solve the problem, because I think that the squad is the quality that it is until January at least. The problem then you can shift on to Ed Woodward and the Glazers, who I think have mismanaged the club in recent years, and I think that the state the United squad is now in is probably down to them more than anybody else, because the haphazard buying in the sort of Van Gaal and Mourinho years, where really there was no strategy, there was nothing sort of tying together these players that were bringing in, you know, going from signing Lukaku to Sanchez, and before that Mkhitaryan, Pogba, Bailly, Lindelof, you know, these were just sporadic signings. So I think that is probably the biggest issue that's affected United, and it's probably Ed Woodward and the Glazers that have to shoulder that blame.
Some people are suggesting, like you've done, Dom, that kind of Ed Woodward is the main person to blame. Obviously, share it, but Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, in your view, shouldn't be sat, because kind of when you've got a guy like Ed Woodward above you, it's not easy to operate like that, and he doesn't necessarily have the squad at his disposal to be challenging for a top four. But should not the question on or asked of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a man that is so inexperienced in management, that was so underqualified for this job, that actually a better manager may not be getting this side to third in the Premier League table, but would be getting more out of this squad. It's not a great squad, but it's not a horrendous squad like it's perhaps being shown up at the moment, that a better, more qualified manager would be getting more out of the squad that United currently have.
Yeah, I agree. A better manager probably would, but United don't have that, and maybe they weren't available at the time. I agree with people who say that Solskjaer shouldn't have been appointed immediately after the Paris Saint-Germain result. That was an emotion-led decision from United's board, and it has now backfired. But I would like to see where they would have been if it had appointed somebody else, maybe in the summer, and given them exactly the same squad and exactly the same transfer that Solskjaer's had. I don't think they'd be in a hugely better position, to be honest. So United are playing the long game with Solskjaer, and Woodward has said that. He said that they believe in the long-term project. They believe in the young players that are coming through. And along the way, they're going to be results like the Newcastle one and the West Ham one and other games that we've seen this season with United dropping points. That's just the way it's going to be.
Michael Owen has tweeted asking the question, are Manchester United more likely to finish top six or in the bottom half? Based on what you've seen so far and where Manchester United are currently at and with the squad that they currently have at this moment in time, what, in your view, Dom, is the realistic ambition for Manchester United now? And could the next few months, could things get even tougher for Manchester United?
Well, they could do, because I think six of their next seven away games, or five of the next six games, sorry, are away from home. And the only one at home is against Liverpool. And they've got Europa League commitments and all sorts to contend with. So I think it is going to remain tough. I think that getting Paul Pogba back and getting Aaron Wan-Bissaka back, Anthony Martial, that will make a difference. And I think United do have the capacity to win games, especially at home. And I think they do actually have the capacity to beat the better teams because of the way they're set up. I think top six is a realistic aim, especially when you look at the teams that are around there and the problems that are being had at Tottenham and Arsenal. So, you know, it's a long, long season. It's been a pretty disastrous start, but try not to sort of make a knee-jerk reaction and say they're going to finish in the bottom half, because I don't really think that's fair.
And just finally then, Dom, if this poor form does continue, how urgently do you think the Manchester United board will start worrying about things and potentially push that panic button? And one man that has been linked with the Manchester United job in the past is Mauricio Pochettino, and things are not all well at Tottenham. Will Manchester United in the coming weeks be starting to think, actually, United could capitalise on the unrest at Spurs and actually try and lure him out of Spurs, even though Manchester United themselves aren't necessarily in a great situation at the moment?
It would be tempting. It would definitely be tempting. And Pochettino, I've said for a number of years, it would be a really good fit at United because how he likes to bring through young players. He does have a tactical style of play, which I think would be better than the one Ole Gunnar Solskjaer currently is implementing. But I don't know whether you're asking me what I think will happen or what should happen. Which one do you want me to answer?
What do you think should happen? Because obviously we can't predict the future. If we could, then we'd all be doing the lottery and winning. But in terms of what you think should happen, how long do you think it would be if the results kept on continuing on this bad run? How quickly do you think the United board would pull the trigger?
I think that they're probably going to stick with Solskjaer, and I think that's what they probably should do. For right or wrong, you know, there are a lot of detractors for Solskjaer out there. A lot of people who point to his record, taking Cardiff down and things like that. But I think the way they've approached it in a long-term strategy means he deserves a bit of time. You know, they haven't said, you must get top form, we'll back you with all this money. He hasn't really had that. So I think that'd be unfair to get rid of him.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Dominic. That was Dominic Booth, Manchester United writer for the Manchester Evening News. Some people jokingly asking the question, could Manchester United be relegated? That's a genuine question. People out there that might have a view, could Manchester United be relegated from the Premier League this season? Call us on 0208 70 20 558. They're currently 12th on 9 points. They are just 2 points above the relegation zone. And you think of some of those teams down near the bottom, who've been in pretty terrible form. Everton have had an awful start to the season. They're currently 18th. They're just 2 points below Manchester United. It is chaos. It is panic stations at Manchester United. They've got a pretty average, if not awful, squad. Blaming injuries. Now, obviously, if you lose first-team players, that's never ideal. And United were without Wan-Bissaka. They were without Luke Shaw, Paul Pogba, Anthony Martial. But it's their fault for not doing more in the transfer window and bringing in players and allowing players. You may have your views on Romelu Lukaku, that he doesn't fit the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer mould or the style of play that he wants, but he's a proven Premier League goal scorer and they didn't replace him. And now they've got 17-year-olds who've hardly played any Premier League football having to step in. You look at their bench last night, it's not good enough. And you look at the United Academy, this is not the Manchester United Academy of 15, 20 years ago. This is a pretty average United Academy that doesn't do particularly well at youth level, that is in the second tier of the Premier League 2. hardly ever getting far in the FA Youth Cup. This is not a strong United academy, so it's not like United are bringing through a whole host of really exciting young local talent. They've got the likes of Mason Greenwood, who is a highly rated player, but not much behind that. And so it is panic stations. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was not the right man for the job when he was given it. It was far too hasty, ridiculous for United to give him the job, despite what Rio Ferdinand said in March after that PSG game. He was not the right selection then. They were ridiculous. They were so silly to give him the job then, not wait until the end of the season. And they now find themselves in this pickle. Ed Woodward is a muppet and is doing awful things in terms of the on-field stuff rather than the commercial. Ed Woodward has got the commercial stuff right at Manchester United. He hasn't got the on-field stuff right. But Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was the wrong man months ago, and he's the wrong man now. And that's why United find themselves in this situation. I think Mauricio Pochettino being the Manchester United manager by the end of 2019 is I think quite a likely opportunity. There is more that he can do, a higher ceiling that he can achieve at Manchester United than he can at Tottenham. He's taken them as far as he can, and I think he would be massively enticed by the opportunity at Manchester United. If you have views on that, call us on 0208 70 20 558. Will Mauricio Pochettino be the Manchester United manager by the end of the year?
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. If you have any views on your manager, that's where the spotlight is at the moment. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at Manchester United, Mauricio Pochettino at Tottenham, and Marco Silva at Everton. Will these men still be in charge by one, the end of this international break? Is it out of the question that Pochettino could resign as the Spurs manager? Could Everton pull the trigger on Marco Silva before the international break? And will Manchester United get rid of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? They're just 2 points above the relegation zone. Yes, it is only 8 games in, but things only seem to be getting worse and worse for Manchester United. So will those managers still be in charge by the end of this international break? Will they still be the managers of the respective clubs by the end of 2019? One man whose kind of position is slightly safer than maybe it was 24 hours ago is Steve Bruce at Newcastle after a 1-0 win against Manchester United at St James's Park. And as I mentioned earlier in the hour, one man that is pretty happy is producer Laurie. 1-0. Before we talk about Matty Longstaff, what will that win do for Steve Bruce in terms of his perception from the Newcastle fans and the way his image in terms of his safety as the Newcastle manager?
Well, I mean, I have to say, I actually disagree with you in the sense of his position is a lot safer than 24 hours ago or 24 hours before the game, because I don't think he's going to get sacked anytime soon, irrespective of results. They showed it in the season with Steve McClaren, where they left it way too late, and Rafa Benitez had 9 games or something to try and keep us up. And, you know, they've got kind of previous with that, with Alan Shearer being given barely any time to try and keep us up as well. And at that angle, no, I don't think that's going to have any effect on his job particularly. However, obviously that's a massive win. It's just frustrating because our 2 wins this season obviously now have come against Spurs and against Man United. Obviously, we've talked about both clubs are in relative disarray, but based on the way that Newcastle have been playing in other games, I mean, we saw them last week, you know, United and Spurs still should have been expected, even in their kind of current positions, to be beating that Newcastle team. But yeah, I mean, they were great yesterday. And in terms of how it'll changes his perception by the fans, I think that's going to take a lot longer, a lot more performances that are kind of near to that, to be honest, because it just wasn't good enough last week at Leicester. But yeah, I mean, can't say I'm not really delighted with the game itself.
Obviously, the day was all about young Matty Longstaff. At 19 years and 199 days, he's the youngest player to score in his Premier League debut for Newcastle. An impressive all-round display. Could have scored another stunner, actually, in the first half that hit the bar. Do you think he would have been given this opportunity if there was more quality in Newcastle's midfield? Or do you think that he's actually, obviously, without using hindsight before the game, has he merited being given this opportunity?
I think he's merited it. I mean, I know we talk about the quality in the squad, but I think one of the grievances that Newcastle fans have with Steve Bruce's appointment is that in some ways you can look at the squad now on paper and say, actually, it's a better squad than last season. And actually, in centre mid as well as at centre back, you know, we have quite a lot of options there. Like, there are a couple of injuries and people are out, etc. But, you know, I think Matty Longstaff, you know, they could have started Shelvey yesterday. So I don't think you can say that he's just kind of the last resort, really. And in pre-season, he was great. And, you know, people who've watched him loads and loads in under 21s, and I've seen bits of him, but, you know, he was always the one that was that people were excited about. Sean Longstaff was kind of the style of player. He had to work really hard, kind of make it. But Matty Longstaff is, by all accounts, from when he was younger, was always really kind of, you know, the one who was chomping at the bit, and people just sort of saw it as a foregone conclusion that he'd get into the first team. So I think there's definitely talent there. He's completely unafraid, which is obviously partly being a young player and having all that raw talent. But, you know, yeah, I think he completely deserved it. And, you know, he played so well yesterday that he completely merited his inclusion, whatever the reason was for it.
Is that what Newcastle fans are after? Obviously, any football fan will want positive results. They'll want wins. But a bit of local bite to put in there, not just in midfield, but in any position, that the one thing you crave, the one thing you love most, is when a young local player who's worked his way through the academy gets his opportunity, that both Matty and Sean Longstaff were in midfield yesterday. Is that what Newcastle fans are desperate? And will that actually help them perhaps like Steve Bruce a bit more, is the fact that he is putting young Newcastle talent in there that may have a few deficiencies and may not be the finished article now, but that he's giving these young lads opportunities, and they, at the very least, you know, they will give 100%, even if kind of the technical part isn't fantastic.
To be honest, I think a lot of fans will see it more as consolation rather than giving credit to Steve Bruce for it. I know a lot of the media have been saying, oh, well, look, he put this young lad in. You've got to give him credit for that. He was under pressure. He didn't have to do it. But yeah, I mean, in terms of like local lads playing, obviously Dummett dropped out of the defence yesterday, but Andy Carroll came on and you had both the Longstaffs already. And, you know, Dummett's in and around the team, plays a lot of games. So yeah, that is really good. And I think, you know, last week was a bad performance, but really this crop of players, the fans don't have, you know, there's not been accusations of them not trying. It's completely different to like the last time we got relegated, when there just wasn't any application before Rafa Benitez came in. So I think that, you know, we're never going to have a qualm with these set of players as they're playing currently, because, you know, they all are all quite dedicated. But yeah, absolutely, it's great to have local lads who you actually think want to wear the shirt playing for the club.
And just finally then, obviously, in addition to Matty Longstaff, will Newcastle fans be able to stay positive going into the international break with performances of the likes of Alan Saint-Maximin, who did impress yesterday? Andy Carroll seems to be building up a bit of fitness, but then we'll probably say that and he'll probably be injured during this international break. Fabian Scher, who had a good season last season, played really well again yesterday. So are there actually some real positives, even though Newcastle was still languishing just about the relegation zone, still positives with the performances?
1 point off Man United. Do you know what? I think that Scher yesterday was absolutely phenomenal. His performance was incredible. I'm a little bit worried that we could lose him in January, actually, because I can think of quite a few top teams that need a centre-back, and I really think he's that good. He's quality. Alan Saint-Maximin, in terms of an outlet going forward, just completely transformed the way. He allowed us to have the ball and move it forward positively, and you know, it was all his good work leading up to the goal yesterday that allowed Matty Longstaff to score that. So yeah, they were some great performances. We saw glimpses of Almiron trying to kind of like drift into the middle yesterday, and I know he missed that chance. He kind of looked reluctant to hit it, and he could have hit it earlier, but I'd really love Steve Bruce. I know he's like kind of talking about changing the shape and style and going back to how Rafa plays, which is quite funny, but you know, like, I'd really like to see him try and put Almiron centrally, because if we play him, Saint-Maximin, you know, and give Joel Linton more of a chance up front, you know, we could be playing more positive football.
So a positive result for Newcastle, a 1-0 win at home against Manchester United.
This is Love Sport.